It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening, and welcome to episode 5 of Fresh Ink Group's Voice of Indie podcast. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and joining me here tonight is my co-host, Stephen Gies. How you doing, Stephen?
I'm pretty good. Hello, everybody. Today I'm wearing my Tennessee Aquarium shirt, so unless you guys have a cool shirt with shimmering fish on the back, I got you beat today.
I've got one of those shirts. I'll have to dig that out. It's been a while since I wore that. I'm wearing the Judas Priest one tonight.
I'll go for Judas Priest. All right, everybody. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Head on over to Twitter and up in the search bar, type in hashtag Fresh Ink Group. And then you can watch the tweets as they come through about the program. People sending in questions and comments and basically our opportunity to say hi to our author, Ronnie Deshay.
Yeah, and if you have a question, listeners, type that in. Fresh Ink Group, hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and post your question there. We'll see it. We'll read it on the air if you have a comment. You can also... Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, we're also taking calls today. Write this number down, 516-453-9902. That's 516-453-9902. Give us a call.
All right. Mary L. Schmidt, a.k.a. S. Jackson, is a retired registered nurse, winner of the Leora Straup Award in Nursing for Academic Excellence and Community Involvement, as well as graduating with high honors and inducted into Sigma Theta Tau International Honor Society of Nursing. She has written 20 books and has been included in 3 anthologies. And with that, I'd like to say welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Mary.
And
hi.
And if you would like to kind of fill in the blanks there and tell us a little bit more about yourself, please feel free.
Oh, great. Thanks. So I have 2 names that I write by, because I use a pen name. So I am Mary L. Schmidt, also known as S. Jackson. And if you type in Mary L. Schmidt into your search bar and you go to images, I'm everywhere. It's all me. I guess that's a good thing. I don't think it's too bad. Anyways, my husband and I, we actually are partners in writing. He doesn't do the writing, but I do. He does come up with ideas and helps me plan adventures for the children's books that we do. And that's a lot of fun. And then I do all the illustrations. But aside from that, we like jeeping. We haven't had a chance to do that lately. And we don't climb over big boulders, but we do like to go off-road, even though it's been a couple years, 3 years since we've been able to do that. We do like to do that, and we also like playing Texas Hold'em. So I don't know. Do you guys play poker?
I haven't played poker in ages.
Man, it's been a long time.
I used to in my younger days.
We love Texas Hold'em. And we have a grandson and a granddaughter. We have 2 children. My son lives out in L.A., in Burbank, actually. And he actually had COVID back in March. He went through 2 waves of it. But he's pretty healthy overall, and so his was milder, and I'm grateful for that because I was worried about him. He's all the way out there, and I'm in the middle of Kansas. What's going on, you know? I'm a nurse, ex-nurse. I wanted to be there, but no, I can't go there because it's too dangerous. So anyways, and then Rachel lives up in the very northwest corner of the state. So we have a grandson, Austin, and granddaughter Emma, and that rounds out our family.
That sounds like a good family.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so you had mentioned, Mary, that you write under pen names. Can you kind of expand on that? Is it just the one pen name, S. Jackson, and what brought that about?
Okay, well, when I wrote my first book, it is a memoir, and everything in it is true, although names were changed, places were changed, states were changed. I could not use my real name. I had to be a pen name. Couldn't even match the letters of my real name to prevent libel. And so that's how I ended up with S. Jackson, and then my husband goes by A. Raymond. Since that time, we do include M. Schmidt on our books because, well, honestly, we live in a small town. Okay, this small town is like 2,500 people.
Wow, that is small.
Everyone in this town knows my first book, the memoir. Everybody knows Angels. They can figure out what they want to figure out on their own. Most everybody knew my son, so. Anyways, but I had to do it, the pen names, because to prevent libel. And honestly, the only doctor that's still practicing here, he wouldn't touch it, anything, because it's his fault, you know, that it went amiss for so long, things that were happening. So no libel. I'm not even worried about it at all. That everybody knows the book, so.
Okay, so then
that's a good thing or a bad thing.
it's tied into your son's treatment then.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break right now and talk about our contests. We've got two contests going right now, one for short stories, short fiction, and one for short memoirs, mini memoirs, little personal experience essays where you talk about some experience you had and also what you learned from it or what we can all learn from it or recognize from it. And we're going to collect these and put out the second and third editions of the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase. The first edition is for sale right now. Get out there and look for it. Hardcover, softcover, ebooks, anywhere worldwide. And go to our website, freshink.com, and make sure you enter your short story for our contest. You got a commercial for it, Beam?
I do.
Writers, got a short story looking for a prestigious anthology that will showcase your work alongside other top authors? Or maybe you've experienced a moment worth sharing, perhaps with some poignant meaning we could all appreciate? Fresh Ink Group is accepting submissions for our second and third volumes of the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase to be released worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. There are no fees to enter. Winners are not only published, but are eligible to become members of Fresh Ink Group with your own dashboard in the freshinkgroup.com website. Head on over to freshinkgroup.com contest tab to learn more. Then grease up the old Underwood and get those shorts down on parchment so you can get your entries in sooner than later. And you readers, discover 49 wondrous tales already released in the Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase number 1, available in all formats worldwide.
Okay, we do have a caller, so I'm going to go ahead and jump over there and see who this is. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name's Pat. I'm calling from St. Louis.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
How you doing, guys? I didn't know if this was the proper format to discuss one of the books that you just published a few weeks ago, or if we wanted to stay on topic with the current author.
Oh, yeah, we're staying on topic with the current author.
Okay.
What book were you talking about?
The Chair, Volume 1.
Oh, okay. Well, we will be playing a promo for that later on in this show.
We also expect to have the author as a guest on this podcast in the coming weeks too.
The week
because the Chair Volume 2 is coming out in about a week or two. So
that would probably be a more appropriate time.
Yeah.
Okay, what was your name again?
Pat from St. Louis. Yes.
Okay, we'll look for you to make sure you call in.
Yeah.
When we're covering the chair.
I sure will, guys. I know he's fighting, the author right now is fighting, he's in Houston fighting the storms coming. So.
Oh, that's right.
I don't even know if he even has electricity. So, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to bother you guys.
Oh, no,
that's okay. Thanks for calling in, Pat.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so, Stephen, you want to take the next question?
Mary, let's get into your books. We understand that you write a lot of children's books, plus you have a couple of memoir books. Can you tell us about your children's book about bullying?
Yeah, I can do that. Also, I want you to know I've got an art book out, and I've got a cookbook out. So
Ooh.
I'm kind of all over
Are
the
these,
place.
Are these personal home recipes?
Yes, they are.
Ooh, I like those kind of cookbooks. I always find something new to cook through those kind of books.
Okay. Well, let's get started on the book about bullies. The name of the book is The Big Cheese Festival, which has taken – actually, this book took us to Miami for our first trip. It took the bronze medal. It also won the Gold Pinnacle Book Award, and it was a finalist in other awards. And the Big Cheese Festival is a completely illustrated book, and I used little mice in it, mice that have hair and wear clothing. And we meet Stubby Mouse, and his name is Stubby Mouse because he only has half of the tail. And we meet his friends, and we learn that he had a secret. He's being bullied by another mouse simply because his tail is short. And so throughout the book, we find out how Stubby ends up standing up for himself and how he stopped the bullying. And kids learn really how bad bullying is and what they can do to help stop bullying all around. I'm looking at page 14 at the moment just because I thought I would go to it. It's really, I made the book stand out. I put oversized teardrops coming out of Stubby's eye because kids need to know that bullying hurts. And they need to know that. Some kids wear glasses when they're called four eyes, or another child may not have like the newest clothing because their family is impoverished and they're picked on. And just bullying just needs to stop. And we really felt this was a big issue, and we wanted to take the issue on, and we wanted to start with kids who were younger. At the end of the story, it's a big cheese festival. At the end of the story, the king and the queen of the big cheese festival end up being Stubby Mouse and Cindy Mouse. So that's where we got that, ended up with that. And so it made it happy in the end. Everyone got to have all kinds of cheese, and everyone celebrated, and they had a good time. But it does take on bullying, and that's still a big issue. When a person reads the book, so it's The Big Cheese Festival by S. Jackson, A. Raymond, and M. Schmidt, and when people read that with their children, they can talk about ways that that children are bullied or what's going on in school or what they've seen, and they can work through that. This book I have read to various schools and classes and preschools, and it's gone over really well. But that was pre-COVID, so I have not done any reading since then, not since COVID came out.
Over the years, have you gotten some feedback on that, any letters or emails or anything from people talking about how that affected them?
Oh, yes. This book, that book has helped a lot of kids. I've had social workers use it to help with kids that they're working with, which is amazing. Actually, I've had social workers take another book, too. It's called Susie Has a Secret by S. Jackson, A. Raymond, and M. Schmidt. And it deals with good touch, bad touch. And that's something that can be geared towards whatever age the child is. The good touch, bad touch issue is huge. And a lot of people, they shy away from writing about it, but I'm a qualified person to write about it as a nurse and working with children who have been abused in that way. I also included in that book, there is a teachers, parents, and educators section in the back explaining how to gear it towards the age level of the child that you're talking to. And it's actually a book that's best to be done one-on-one with a child using, you can use a doll if you want, but the best way to do it with kids is to use the swimsuit rule. If where your swimsuit covers up, you don't get to be touched. And if someone touches you there, don't feel bad, but, you know, tell your parents or whoever's, whatever's going on. In the book, Susie had an uncle that was tickling her where she didn't like it. And her older brother actually overheard Susie telling another child at recess what had happened. And her older brother said, we need to tell Mom and Dad. And they did, and Uncle didn't get to come over to the house anymore. That said, you can flip that around because it's not – okay, men do a lot of molesting, but women do it too, to little boys. So I just want to make that point that it's not just little girls that are treated that way. Unfortunately, one day I noted a little bruise on my stepdaughter and on her upper chest, and I asked her what was going on, and she said that her stepfather had tickled her, and I got to talking with her, and then the whole story came out. He actually abused her, and he did everything but rape her, and so this is right,
wow.
This is my stepdaughter, my bonus daughter, and she had a stepfather that did everything but rape her. And that's how it all came out. And anyways, my husband, I worked with him, took his ex to court, and we got Rachel. We got her. Unfortunately, Rachel didn't want to cause any problems with him because he had fathered a son with her mother, and she didn't want to hurt her little brother. So, nothing was done court-wise.
Are you aware of any people using this book out there, groups, schools, organizations, anything like that?
Yes, I do. I know of social workers. I know of a couple of schools, and I know some church pastors have been using it.
Good.
Again, it has the parents, educators, and teacher section in the back that explains how to use the book. The book itself, it has illustrations, but they're very simple because I wanted the focus to be on what the story was and not everything that you could see on the page. So I kept the illustrations simple, and that seemed to work. And the book has, it's, everything has been 5-star all the way on that one. And it has won a lot of awards. Actually, last November, it took a silver medal. So, and it won other awards as well. So, thank you.
Congratulations.
So that was our third time to Miami, was last November. And we
now,
had two books that had awards.
Now, do you make these trips to those cities like Miami?
The first year with the Big Cheese Festival, yes, we went. Excuse me. The second year with the Angels book, we took a bronze medal in the Audible book, the audio book, and we went. And then this last November, the Susie book took silver and the Hero book took a medal, and so we went for both of those books. So we went 3 years in a row. This year, we're not going. They're actually not going to hold it, but people aren't supposed to know that yet. I surely shouldn't be saying that. They're not going to be holding, they canceled having the event in November, but they are announcing on September 1st something that else that they're doing differently for people who have, so that people receive their awards. And I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be, but September 1st is coming up fast, and people will be able to find out then what the deal is going to be, since they're not going to be able to have a live award show this year.
Yeah, that's
Yes, we flew 3 years in a row.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, you know, when you're driving to Miami, you got to go right past where I am in Alabama. So next time, let's stop and say, hey.
Well, she flew down there.
We left Miami last November. We ended up going to Philadelphia, of all places.
That's not on the
and
way.
And then to Kansas City. It was crazy. It was crazy, but, you know, that's how it goes.
Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about Shadow and the Enchanted Forest?
Shadow and the Enchanted Forest. Well, first of all, Shadow is our daughter's long-haired dachshund, and we have a lot of backyard squirrels, and one of them is actually walking a high wire right now. They do that a lot. They come up to the window and beg for nuts and things because my husband's a sucker for that, and I am too.
Yeah, we had some that used to come to the back window for cookies all the time.
And Larry
funny.
Landgraf
you know,
had
really
a mallard duck.
Peanut butter cookies. Anyway, so we ended up with these squirrels, and we started giving them names, and I mean, they were good at begging. Oh, they're good. And that's another thing. I have out a meme book. Just squirrel memes, 75 greatest squirrel memes that I made. So
I see those on Twitter a lot.
I have really a lot going on. Plus an art gallery, so see? And a busy blog. So anyways,
so,
back to the series. Book 9 in the series is Shadow and Friends, which happen to be squirrels, visit the Enchanted Forest. And what happens, I made it into a fairy tale. And everything that's in the forest is enchanted. And they learn, they get a key. They receive a key that unlocks a hidden door in an enchanted tree. And finding the secret door, they open it, and they are brought in by an enchanted fairy named Lisa. And then they see amazing things going on, like a mushroom family who can talk, a beautiful festival of lights with butterflies that speak, flowers that speak. They spend time at an apple harvest festival. They visit different mushroom houses, and it's truly a land of make-believe. And kids have liked this book since it was released. I have had a lot of good response back from it. It's different. You know, you get a rabbit, you come up to a rabbit, and it's enchanted, and it tells you hello. And you come up to these apples, but you can't eat them because they're living, and the apple fairy says, you can't eat them, they're enchanted. But then they take them to where there were things that they could eat. And then there's an acorn that's enchanted, and it's got sparkles on it and everything. And one of the squirrels wanted to eat it. And the enchanted acorn said, you can't eat me. I said, no, you can't. So, you know, it's fun. We wanted this book to be really fun for kids with lots of colorful illustrations, and that's what we did. I've got a shoe house in it. I've got pretty much everything you can think of that would be in an enchanted book is in it, as well as all pages that show the entire series, as well as the Susie of the Secret, Cheese Festival, and it also has a page talking about Sammy Hero at age 5 and When Angels Fly. So I put everything in the book.
Good.
That book has gone over really well.
And I understand you have a new Shadow book coming out.
We just had one that came out this week, and it's book 10 in the series, Shadow and Friends Meet Mr. Rabbit. And I thought about this book because of the COVID thing going around. That's what made me think about it. So this book, well, children learn how, well, squirrels and rabbits don't play the same. And it starts off with a squirrel trying to jump onto a rabbit, and it doesn't work out very good, and the squirrel almost loses his acorn, and the rabbit does a handstand because they're kind of wacky rabbits, and they're wearing little clothes and everything. And it's cute. And anyway, so the children learn how squirrels and rabbits react and play together in real life and in fairy tale life because they do a game of hopscotch. And in that game, it shows how to draw the game out. The rabbits use carrot for the square that they toss their carrot onto, and the squirrels use walnuts. And so they're having a lot of fun. And then there's also the rabbits speak, and there's a baby rabbit that has a pacifier in his mouth and it actually wears a diaper. So they're not the typical-looking bunny rabbits, but they're dressed really fun for kids. And I just wanted the kids that I've seen that have read this, actually we did a Facebook Live on it. My husband was showing pages as I was doing the reading, and it went over really well. And I had some great feedback on it. So anyways, they end up decorating eggs, and they get to that point, and there's a little fairy that comes by and says, "You need to decorate eggs. It's Easter's coming up." And so they do that, and they do all this stuff that you would normally do with Easter eggs. And then we get into real life, and we get into sins and what a sin is. And with kids, it's you don't steal candy from a store, you cheat on your homework, don't lie to your parents, those kinds of things, because God doesn't like that. Because we want them to know exactly what Easter's about. And then we talk about what happens, because oftentimes, you know, kids know death at a very young age. And sometimes, more than often than not, it is scary to them. And they know either a great-grandparent has passed away, they're never going to see them again, that's what they think, or they see a spider stepped on, a fly is killed, a mosquito is killed, there's an animal on the road, on the highway that they see that's dead, and things like that. So kids know death very young, younger than some parents actually realize. They see it, and sometimes it scares them. But they need to know that death isn't scary. And so it goes into talking about that God sent his only son down to earth because he wanted to save all of his children. And so he allowed Jesus to be nailed on the cross for his sins, and he died. And after dying, it goes into how he was raised up. And so Jesus, of course, wasn't inside the tomb, and he had risen to heaven, and that means that Jesus was alive. This way, children can have hope and hope for the future, so they know that when grandma or grandpa passes away, their spirit and their body goes to heaven. And what does the spirit mean? Well, that will tell them, explain to them that that's a part of the person that they cannot see. And it lets us know that we'll see our loved ones again. It means that Easter means that there is life after we die and that death is not scary at all. And
it's a very, very serious subject.
Children need to know that death is not scary, that they will see their loved ones, and that it's really, really wonderful that Jesus died on the cross and rose alive again for us to wash away things we do, the sins, and that we just need to have faith and believe, and that truly Easter is the greatest story ever told. So we go from having all these fun things and a winking rabbit and some other stuff going on to getting into the part about the games, the Easter egg hunt, and then talking about sins, and sins in a way that kids can think of things that they do or haven't or don't do. You know, if they took their sibling's toy or something and hid something, just different things like that.
I think
this is something. But the point is, it's for them to not be afraid that when people die, it's to help them be able to cope at a younger age, to help them understand that it's not the end, that they will see these people again, and that it's not something to be afraid of.
Yeah, well, death is it's a fact of life. I mean, it's going to happen to everybody. So, you know,
exactly.
It shouldn't be something scary, but it tends to be.
And in this age of COVID, kids are hearing people dying. They're hearing things from their parents. Their parents are talking to each other, or they're talking to a neighbor, or whoever they're talking to. And kids overhear things in this day and age and with this COVID. And that's why I didn't bring the COVID up into the book, but that was what really put me into doing it, was kids are hearing so many things and they're confused. And it was just the thing to do. I thought it was the thing to do. Right.
One thing I like about the Shadow books is even though you get into some very, very serious topics, they're still funny. They're fun and they're funny and they're lighthearted throughout. So you're not coming at children with a heavy hand.
No, but kids laugh. They have a lot of fun. When pre-COVID and doing book readings and things, the kids were just laughing and really getting into the stories. And, you know, when you're doing a reading, you can ask them certain questions and they can ask questions, and it's really a lot of fun. And we've always received some really good feedback from the kids.
Great. Terrific.
We love doing that. And hopefully at some point we will be able to do, or I will be able to do some readings again. Sometimes I did it alone and other times we did it together. So it just depends. But right now with COVID, we're doing more internet type readings, which we just started this week.
Okay, we're going to jump over here to Twitter real quick because we do have a couple of comments. So I don't want these to feel neglected. So just two quick comments. Verwayne Greenho, he says, "All right, I'm listening to the Freshening Group podcast." And he's saying, "Join
me."
Hey, Verwayne, thanks for the listen and for the promo here in your tweet. And Ronnie Deshay says, "Hi, everybody. I'm enjoying the show so far." And she said, "Mary, so sorry to hear about your stepdaughter." So there's Ronnie Deshay. Thank you for your comment, Ronnie.
Thank you. Thank you, Ronnie.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back with Mary L. Schmidt in a moment. First, we want to tell you about another Freshening Group author, Stephen Hargis. He is the sports writer for the major newspaper in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and that means his job has included covering high school football, which down here in Alabama, believe it or not, is a big deal. And he's right over the Alabama line there in Tennessee, where there's two high schools 8 miles apart that have this fierce, intense rivalry that has gone back for generations. So he has put out a book that covers the entire history of that rivalry with photos and stories and quips and interviews and anecdotes and all kinds of stuff. And it's called 8 Hateful Miles because of that distance between the two schools. So here's a promo for 8 Hateful Miles by Stephen Hargis.
In the heart of the Bible Belt, only one thing could drive folks to set aside the good Lord's commandment to love thy neighbor. One of the state's longest and most combative high school football rivalries. Located about 25 miles west of Chattanooga, hard by the Alabama state line, and in an area with more pride than prosperity, the level of football achievements at Marion County in South Pittsburgh, separated by just 8 miles, has fueled the rivalry's intensity for nearly a century. South Pittsburgh is the only school in the state that has played for a state championship in all 6 decades that Tennessee has held a playoff system. While Marion County once reeled off a streak of 56-1 that included 4 state titles in 6 years. Having seen every game since the mid-1970s, first as a student at South Pittsburgh, Ben is a Chattanooga sports writer since 1990. Stephen Hargis brings a unique perspective to Tennessee's most quarrelsome prep football rivalry. He brings every title run to life with a mixture of history, humor, and nearly 200 color photos. He takes you right into the locker rooms as coaches prepare for each big game and onto the sidelines to hear the trash talking between players. Stephen brings to life the ultra-competitive characters on both sides as he weaves the heartfelt personal stories of coaches, players, and supporters from the community who give the colorful rivalry so much of its energy. Proximity and pride are what energize the atmosphere of the games. Published by Fresh Ink Group, 8 Hateful Miles can be yours now as a keepsake dust jacket and hardcover, trade paperback, and all ebooks worldwide. Familiarity truly does breed contempt. Across 8 Hateful Miles.
I should add that this one surprised us because it's a regional book. We expected it to sell well around the Chattanooga area, but it's actually selling well all across the country. There's just a big interest in this kind of fierce rivalry and what goes on behind it. I also want to add that if you're interested, you can get an autographed copy of the book by going to Hargis, H-A-R-G-I-S, Hargis.FreshInkGroup.com, and there you can place your order directly. Beam?
Yeah, you know, and you had mentioned that, you know, high school football is big in Alabama. I know it's huge in Texas. I know down in Texas, some of those stadiums that they play in are like the same size as some of these college football stadiums. So there's regions all over this country where people are really into high school football. So
yeah, they charge admission to get into the high school football games down here. I wasn't used to that when I was in high school.
And people will pay to get into stadiums. Okay, so Mary, let's slide into your memoir now. When Angels Fly, this is an award winner like your other ones, and this was a very personal story, being a memoir. So why don't you share a little bit about
that? When Angels Fly was my very first book. And it was difficult to write. It started out, I had journals, and what I had done was I was putting them into digital format for my son, my living son, because I wanted him to have a digital format, something that he could read, rather than trying to read through my handwriting. And as I got into it, I started thinking it should be a book. And anyway, and so it ended up being a book. It was extremely difficult to write. Again, because of the memoir and because of the chance for libel, that's why pen names were used. It is in its third edition with fresh ink. And I am going to say thank you to everyone that did some editing on it, because it is one book that I could not edit worth anything because I lived it and breathed it.
Yeah, I did the edit on the Fresh Ink Group edition, and it got intense. There were some times when I had to stop, take a break, and come back to it.
I lived it, and there was no way. As many times as I've read the book and looked at it, and there is no way I was going to have fresh eyes for it. And if I did, I was going to be crying. So it was just not something that I could do. So I had to just say, okay, I can't do this. Someone else has to do this. This is just, I can't do it. So we go into the story, and so I have two kids, and, well, we start off, actually, with the cycle of abuse, and I was abused in almost every way by my mother. And I won't get into it too much, but I do believe that she shot my stepfather.
Wow.
Actually, and he did die, but that's a different thing. That's actually in the screenplay for the book. It is included in the screenplay, but not in Angel's book. We go into, so I get out of that, I get out of school, and it's like, okay. So I go from one abusive relationship right into another one with my ex. And so the book has, it talks about the cycle of abuse and how it works and that there is hope and that you can get out. There are options and there are ways, and you don't need to feel alone. You can get out and you can be safe. As we get into the book further, my firstborn son, Shane, he was born blue. Well, he was, I had labor induced because he had died inside of me. So labor was induced and I had to give birth to him. And that destroyed me to such an extent that I thought I would not recover. And then I had another son, Noah, and he was healthy. He almost did not make it. He was actually too big to go through the normal birthing process, but between being pulled and everything and the way he was engaged, he had to, and he did come out blue. His Apgar wasn't very good, but he did come back from it, and he works as a machinist in Burbank, California, machining parts for the Defense Department of the United States. So he has a $500,000 machine that he does a lot of high-tech stuff with for them and an aerospace company for the DOD. So he has a very important job, and he did survive. And then I had my youngest son, Sam, and Sam is Eli in the book. And he ends up being misdiagnosed for about half a year before finally being diagnosed with a mass, soft tissue mass in his neck. And there's a little fossa in the skull where it's actually not sealed, and so it extended through that into his brain cavity. And when he was diagnosed with cancer, it was rhabdomyosarcoma, and when he was diagnosed with cancer, he was almost 5 years old. He was 4 and a half, and it had already spread to both of his lungs. So he was in stage four. I stayed with him every day, day and night, at the hospital with his battle. It was a very hard battle for him. It was a very scary battle. The important thing for parents and adults to know is that they need to be an advocate for the child, but they have to be an advocate in the right way. For instance, because you don't want to alienate the nurses or the doctors, and you can do that if you don't do it right. So if your child is in pain and they need pain medicine, then they should have it within less than 30 minutes. If your child's antibiotic is hung an hour late, don't sweat it. Don't sweat that, because they still have the medicine, and you don't know what the nurse had to do before that. They may have had a code. Anything could have happened that took priority. So that's something that you wouldn't worry about. Don't be a stickler on that. So I try to help people understand what to do, how to be an advocate for the child and not alienate the medical staff. It's a very important thing. And you have to be involved with your child's care. I was extremely involved
with my son's care.
Yes. I was extremely involved with my son's care. I did a lot of his IVs and everything. I did all of that. But then I had to do it when he was at home, and I got to take him home like four different weekends. So, and of course, being a learning hospital, and I was competent, and I did a lot of it. I didn't do any chemo. There was a lot of things I didn't do. I didn't do any blood products, but I did his parenteral nutrition and his Hickman. I did all of his Hickman care. I did a lot of things. I did most things for him. And my ex, throughout the entire thing, he just tried to cause drama and problems, and so did my mother. But that was my mother being jealous of I couldn't have I couldn't have my middle son who lived out in Burbank right now. I couldn't have him at the medical center. So we had to stay 203 miles away. I couldn't have him there because there was no way I could take him to school in the big city and be there for my youngest son. And there's just no way. And there was no way I was going to let him be with my mother. So I asked my babysitter, my registered babysitter, I said, would you please foster him for as long as I need to be in the city with my youngest? And she did it, and my mother was jealous of that. But I think all she wanted was the money. Sadly, that doesn't sound very nice, I know, but that's probably what she wanted. Anyways, so my son went through this big, long battle, and there were mistakes made by the medical staff, and one of them was a very bad mistake, and it ended up costing my son his life.
One of the things that struck me while reading this is it's entirely from your point of view, so we're right there in the room with you often while you're dealing with these things, struggling to juggle how you're going to have one son who's healthy and needs your time and attention, but another son who needs even more attention. And those little observations you made about how to cope, how to get by, how to deal with staff, that's very important stuff. And it seems like small details, but it's the kind of thing that puts readers right there with you and at the same time gives some helpful advice and also gives some hope.
There's always hope. And the little things, those are the things that count. They count. Those big things count too, but little things, they add up and they count in ways
very
you can't
much.
Even imagine unless you're in that position. Following that book, I also have a screenplay out called The King of Loss. It includes, the screenplay is pretty much, it goes through the gist of what happened with my youngest son and all three of my boys. And it also, unfortunately, does include, or fortunately, because we decided to have it in there, my mother was known as the Black Widow around these parts. And rightfully so. She divorced my father after 21 years of marriage. And then she moved on to younger guys. She moved to a different, she was dating people, seeing people in a different county altogether. She ended up marrying a man, and he had a heart attack 6 weeks later.
Oh.
So that didn't work out well.
No.
Then she broke up two marriages because she decided that the only men that were worth anything had to be married, and the ones that weren't worth anything. And then she married another man, and she married him 3 times. And he's the one who was shot. She actually came over to where I was living, and she never did that. And she did it, and late at night, and then during the middle of the night, she's still there and talking, and is like, I want this woman to just leave, go away. She's not doing it. And all of a sudden she comes out with, do you think Harold would shoot himself?
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, what? And this
well, there's a book right there on itself.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take one more. We're going to have to take one more quick break here, Mary. And then when we come back, we'll ask you about Sammy Hero at age 5. The author we're going to talk about now, we're going back to Chattanooga, Tennessee, believe it or not. We have another author who is the NBC affiliate news anchor. He heads the evening news and has for quite a few years after being on the radio in Chattanooga and being very well known. His name is David Carroll. And the name of his book is Volunteer Bama Dog. Volunteer referencing Tennessee, the volunteer state, Bama, Alabama, and Dog, the Bulldogs of Georgia. So right here in this corner of these three states, there's all these football rivalries and all these different sports things going on. and a lot of things happening in the media landscape, and David Carroll has witnessed it all and is sharing that in his book, Volunteer Bama Dog.
Fresh Ink Group presents Volunteer Bama Dog, a TV guy's love letter to the South. I'm David Carroll, longtime Chattanooga broadcaster. Volunteer Bama Dog is a collection of my stories shared on TV, in newspapers, and online. From growing up in an Alabama country store to a long career in radio and television, I'll introduce you to the kinds of Southern characters we've all known or wish we knew. This collection of humor, history, trivia, and heartfelt memories serves up more than 60 essays. Drawing from my experiences with news, music, and entertainment, Volunteer Bama Dog is both educational and fun. It offers behind-the-scenes commentary on how we cover and deliver the news and on the music we grew up with. Among the book's highlights is a series of stories that recall Southernisms or the Appalachian English that generations of Southerners still quote to this day. I try to bring that language to life, hoping you'll say, "I knew people who said that," or, "Wait, he's been listening to me." This follow-up to my first book, Chattanooga Radio and Television, is more of a personal account of my experiences with those many wonderful people I've met and even worked alongside over the years. I hope you'll join me as Volunteer Bama Dog celebrates the stories and people of the South. Volunteer Bama Dog is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and ebook formats, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Volunteer Bama Dog is proudly published by The Fresh Ink Group.
When Beam and I make these videos, we usually hire professional talent to do the voiceovers. We got ready to do this one. I called him up and said, "Hey, you know somebody that can do the voiceover for your video? TV news anchor." I think he managed to pull that one off himself.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that book and about David Carroll is, he's interviewed a lot of people that everybody knows over the years, and he's got these great little stories and tidbits and anecdotes about him. We're going to jump over to Twitter real quick because Verwayne Greenhill has left a comment here. He said, "I'm listening about the telling about the death of a baby in utero. That's hard on the patient and the nursing staff. My wife was an OB nurse for 43 years. I know that when she came home, it was hard for her too. My condolences." And again, thank you for your comment, Verwayne.
Thank you.
So,
appreciated.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here, but how about we get into you've got Sammy, Hero at Age 5. This is another memoir. What's the difference between this one and When Angels Fly?
I would like to say one little bit more about my mother before we do that, please. My mother
was
able. But that there is no doubt she was evil. Everyone knew that. She ended up having a hemorrhagic stroke on one side, and when she fell out of her chair during the stroke, she hit the other side of her head. So she had a brain bleed on both sides, and she was in a Wichita hospital for about 12 days before she passed. I did go there. I did make sure that she saw me. Her nurse was in the room, and I said, "I want you to make sure that she has morphine for air hunger and Ativan for agitation." And then I said, "And I'm not coming back." And I didn't. But I did my duty as a daughter, and I did my duty as a nurse. So I did my duty, and now we're going to Hero. Hero, Sammy, Hero at Age 5. This book is for kids and teenagers. Kids, the biggest worry in it is rhabdomyosarcoma, and that's because that's the type of cancer that Sam had. And this book is all from his point of view.
And narrated by
him. It's actually not easy to write from a 5-year-old point of view. But it was succeeded. We did it. My son and I did it, and it comes out, it talks different anecdotes about just shenanigans they got into as they were growing up off and on, and then it got into how Sam became a hero and what happened with him. None of it is there's nothing in it that says anything really sad or you would cry with, because it's more of a upbeat type of thing. And we want it to be that way so that kids and older kids could read it and be okay with it.
I was struck especially by how much I felt like I got to know Sammy. And that's an important thing because, you know, in this world, in this life, he's not with us anymore. But his mother, who knew him better than anybody, can tell us in a way, hearing Sammy talk, that shows us who he is and what kind of person he was. And as a tribute to your son, I want to commend you for that, because I think this is a very important book and that you did a very fine job on it.
Thank you. I've had some good feedback on this book as well. It's everything is true. The real names are used in this book. Everything's real. Nothing is fake. Nothing changed. All the things that happened, the different things they did, whether it was learning how to pick up a crawdad or whatever, it's all real things, all real memories of the kids when they were little. Everything
and real. And real photos, too, which I thought was very important.
And real photos. Real photos. I forgot about that, but yes, it has about a dozen, does it? Something like that?
Yes, I think maybe 14 or 15.
So it's really relatable to other kids, and it helps other kids with, you know, if they know somebody who's really sick, it helps them. Kids, they like reading the antics that other kids get into. They love that. So,
oh, yeah, definitely.
I know that we don't have a lot of time left, and people probably want to know how to get a hold of me, and there is an easy way to do that. If you go to winangelsfly.net, you can click on links or any of the different things on the top of the menu, and you can go to any of the books, you can go to ways of contacting, whether it's sending me an email, you can go to Amazon, you can go to everywhere. Everything is on there, and it's the easiest thing to remember is winangelsfly.net. We'll take you from there. You can go and find me anywhere.
And
so,
you can also.
Do you have any other questions about Hero?
You've been getting some good feedback on it. You're hearing from people?
I have been hearing from some people. They laugh about the things that the kids did when they were little. I mean, kids can be angry and just do things. And I've had some great feedback about that. And those have been happy memories. And this was actually a happy book to write. Not because Sam dies. I mean, he's certainly a hero. He did become a hero. He was a hero the day he was born. But there's a lot of fun in the book, and it just made things, brought out a lot of happy memories, and that was something that I did not think I would ever have for a long time until the book was written.
Good.
Well, oftentimes, you know, writing is a cathartic sort of way of getting through a lot of that. And unfortunately, we're down to the last minute. So we do want to say thank you so very much for being on the show
tonight.
Thank
you, Mary.
And for sharing your
You're
life
welcome.
With us.
Thank you for
and,
having me.
And hopefully we can have you on again sometime. So,
that would be wonderful.
I want to say thank you to those who tuned in and listened. And don't forget, this is going to be in the archive, so share the link. And Stephen, anything you want to say?
We'll be back here next Wednesday. Make sure you tell all your friends and come listen.
And enjoy the rest of your night, everybody.
Bye.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.